Dr. Yolanda Lawson, president of the National Medical Association, on why black doctors are calling code blue for DEI in the nation's medical schools. Dr. Lawson, an honor to have you on this program. How are you today?
I am well, thank you. And how are you?
If I complained, I'd be an ingrate. I'm doing well and delighted to be in conversation with you. Let me just jump right in and give you a few moments here before we dive too deep to set the stage for why we're having this conversation. I've been seeing a number of articles and been tangentially connected to a number of conversations of late about what's happening regarding DE&I, specifically, though, with regard to medical schools. Everybody knows the assault. We all know the attack on DEI across the board. But now it's gotten to the point where it's become critical vis-a-vis medical schools. So first, set the stage for me why we're having this conversation, what's going on, and then we'll jump from there, if you don't mind.
Absolutely. So we're having this discussion because, as you have likely heard, as everyone has, a representative out of North Carolina presented legislation to ban DEI in medicine. And so the concern is, while we talk about medical schools, medical education transcends into the residency programs after you finish medical school and even into our hospitals. And so this is very disturbing to the National Medical Association. You understand we are an organization of black physicians. We work in different realms in medicine and healthcare. And so when you talk about diversifying the workforce and we talk about the healthcare workforce, we know that diversity is an important piece of that because we are underrepresented.
Mm-hmm. I am not naive in asking this question, but tell me more about what this legislation specifically aims to do.
Absolutely. It aims to reduce any DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion policies or frameworks that currently exist in medical education. And be clear, they had to exist. If you think about historically, right, government and legally mandated because of unfair practices. We know that there's disparities that exist in this country, but we also know that black doctors represent only 5.7% of physicians in this country. When you look at who's in medical school, the majority, of course, are Caucasians and then Asians. We only represent a small population of not only what's the matriculants in medical school, but then you think about black doctors as a whole in the country. And so what this legislation could threaten are these frameworks to protect inclusionary policies for the admittance of students into medical school. We know that there's also a disparate outcome there. We do not have the number of medical students represented of color in medical schools that we wish that mimics the population. I'm sure everyone's heard in the past 4 or 5 years around black men in medicine. It's been 80 years and we've not been able to increase the number of black men in medicine. So these are dire outcomes that relate, right, directly relate to health disparities and health equity in this country.
I've got a long list of things I want to probe Dr. Yolanda Lawson about now that we've set the stage for this conversation in this hour. We are going to spend the rest of this hour talking about the critical, and I do mean critical, impact of DEI legislation now introduced out of from a representative in North Carolina, as you just heard, the critical impact of that on medicine. Our guest is the president of the National Medical Association, Dr. Yolanda Lawson, who you're listening to right now, and I'm glad about it, on Tavis Smiley.
You're listening to Tavis Smiley.
Tavis Smiley.
Ranked number 45 on the Heavy 100 list of the 100 most important radio talk show hosts in America.
Helping to make you
the most knowledgeable person in your circle of friends. This is Tavis Smiley.
This is Tavis Smiley in conversation with Dr. Yolanda Lawson, who's president of the National Medical Association. This is an organization of black physicians all across the country. And they are concerned, as they should be, about legislation introduced recently by a representative out of North Carolina, who has called for the end of DE&I, as it were, in the medical field. And the implications of that legislation, if passed, would be dire. Of course, we know the makeup of the House. We know the makeup of the Senate. But we don't want to be lax in our conversation, for that matter, in our advocacy about what this would mean were this legislation to pass. And so we are jumping on this immediately As somebody once said, sooner than right now and quicker than at once, to make sure that the country understands the impact this would, the dire impacts this would have were this legislation to pass. So you said a few things a moment ago, Dr. Lawson, that I want to spend the rest of the hour sort of interrogating now. And I'm not even sure where I want to start because there's so many things here. I think I want to start with this, that there is a shortage, not just of African-American physicians, but there's a shortage of physicians in this country writ large. I've had this conversation more than once on this program. The pandemic had doctors and nurses, for that matter, working longer hours than they ever cared to work, ever thought they would work. We put our system to the test, our healthcare system, that is, in a variety of ways, trying to navigate our way through that pandemic. As a result, a lot of physicians retired once they navigated this country through that pandemic. And so the numbers suggest to us now that there is a shortage of a number of professionals in this country. The two that come to mind immediately are teachers. There's a teacher shortage, and there is a physician and a nurse shortage. So you have that reality to begin with, and then you want to pass legislation to deny black folk opportunities to get in the field. Take it from there, please.
Absolutely, and I completely endorse what you're saying. One of my focus areas during my presidential term has been the healthcare workforce. Mm-hmm. And so you hear all of these pressures on physicians, right? You think about, you've heard about the burnout, you heard about the pandemic and how many people left the workforce with that. Then you take into account as black physicians, you know, this is not on deaf ears when you talk to the NMA. We help physicians deal with discriminatory issues within hospitals and their healthcare entities in which they work. Mm-hmm. And so while we know these pressures, and I always say this, if the white doctors are burned out and leaving the workforce, what do you think is happening to the black doctors, right? It's always this triple-fold impact upon us. And so while we are dealing with the same things our other majority colleagues may be dealing with, right, the pressures of regulation, the pressures of reimbursement, the pressures of burnout, working these long hours, you know, all these impacts on the force, and then you take into account what we have to deal with just based on discrimination, sometimes racism, and the impact on the workforce. So the past 2 years, we have at our annual meetings, we've been addressing racism in medicine and the impact on the health of the black physician. It's a real thing that we have to address internally for the organization to support black doctors in this country.
We'll talk about racism in medicine as we move through this hour. We will talk about the pipeline or lack thereof for black folk to get into the field of medicine. But before I do any of that, I want to start again with this come again to this legislation that's been introduced by this representative out of North Carolina. One of the primary reasons they give, it's a red herring to be sure, but one of the primary reasons we often hear about why they are attacking these DE&I programs is that they are unfair, number one. But the other U word is that they let people in who are unqualified. That's the rub against these DE&I programs, that they are unfair and that they allow people in who are unqualified. I want to take those things separately. Let me start with the unqualified piece. So that there is this notion that many people have that these kinds of programs, again, allow people in who really aren't up to par. And let me just be clear about this. If there's anybody you want to be up to par, it's your doctor. You do not want to be in a medical facility or in an operating room with somebody who got through because they were black, putting that in air quotes, and aren't really qualified to do the job. So let's tackle first this issue that they're pushing back against D&I programs, particularly in medicine now, because they don't want black folk in it who are unqualified to be in the room in the first place.
Thank you for that question, because that probably is the piece of this that has us most outraged, right? People have to understand. So when these DEI attacks began, this was this force that universities are just hiring people because of their color, their skin, right? And not based on merit nor their achievements. And I'd like to address that, number one, if I could speak with Dr. Murphy myself, the representative out of North Carolina, would say to him, number one, to matriculate through medical school, right, to make it through medical school, number one, you have to have a certain caliber, not only of a foundation of education, but of intelligence, right? It is not easy, as we all know, to get through medical school. You look at the numbers and how competitive it is. how difficult it is. Of course, we deal much of the attrition we see with black students in medical school. Much of it is due to many of the claims around discriminatory practices, racism, double standards, different standards for these students, right? And maybe these other external stressors and factors, not necessarily based upon merit. And so we vehemently argue that this merit discussion or quality is reduced by providing DEI within the framework of medical education. Again, it's probably the thing that has us most upset about.
Mm-hmm. Let me, since you went there, I could have started and perhaps should have started our conversation with some background as to who this Dr. Murphy is that you just referenced. I don't like to ever make assumptions that the audience understands exactly what we're talking about or the frame that we're in. So let me just back up for a second and apologize for not doing this a few moments ago. So the Dr. Murphy that Dr. Lawson just referenced is Representative Greg F. Murphy, MD. He is serving his third term in Congress representing North Carolina's 3rd Congressional District. He sits on the House Ways and Means Committee, the House Veterans Affairs Committee, and the Committee on House Administration. He chairs the House GOP Doctors Caucus, and that gives you a sense about who he is. Now, the irony of that quick bio about Dr. Murphy, Congressman Murphy, is that he's serving in Congress, but he is, in fact, a physician himself. How does the National Medical Association process the fact that one who is, in fact, a physician would advance legislation like this?
Again, he is a physician, and it is purely lack of acknowledgement of the past, complete. We know that there's evidence, there's occurrences that have occurred historically in this country. We can't turn that around, right? Mm-hmm. It's documented, it's fact, right? Laws have to be passed to allow integration. Laws have to be passed to allow us to integrate into hospitals, for us to get into other entities and organizations. So these are historical facts that exist. And so the complete disregard for not only the history around in medicine in this country, but also the present day facts, right? When you look at, as I talked about, who's enrolled in medical school, and don't even let me begin to speak about faculty. Mm-hmm. When you look at academic faculty enrolled in medical school, 2.68% of faculty in 1990 were black. In 2020, we got that to 3.8%. So you're talking about a 1.1% increase in 40 years, just around black faculty mm-hmm. in medical school institutions. And then when you begin to look at who is in medical school, again, the numbers right now, we are at the highest we've ever seen. We have about black medical students, about 10%. But then when you look at black physicians in this country, it's about 5.7%. And so I know that he understands the numbers. I know that he understands there are racial health disparities. I know that he understands this issue. So it's even more disappointing mm-hmm. that a physician would bring forth this type of legislation with the knowledge that I know he understands disparities. He's a urologist by specialty. Mm-hmm. Black men die twice as likely as white men from prostate cancer. I know he knows these numbers. So it's quite concerning that he would do something like this without, again, taking into effect historical occurrences, historical evidence.
Yeah.
And also you think about our future.
Yeah, I can't say I'm shocked by this, but it is unnerving, the extent to which people will go to play politics when they know better. They will play politics yes. even when they know better. And that's the point that Dr. Lawson is making. Now, Dr. Murphy, first of all, he's a physician. Second of all, he's a member of Congress, so he ain't ignorant. He's not uneducated. And clearly he reads. He right. understands. He understands what these numbers say to us. And yet he's advancing this nonsensical legislation anyway. I digress on that for now. We talked about, I referenced these two U words. I wanted to give you a chance to unpack. Speaking of U words, unpack. We talked about unqualified. Now I want to get to the unfair piece, that other U word. Medical schools, as you well know, are very, very, very competitive. And so part of the rub again that we hear from these persons who have these grievances about black people advancing is that because medical schools are already so competitive, it should not be, it's not just and it's not right to give an unfair advantage to Yolanda Lawson or Tavis Smiley or anybody else just because Joy Calloway, anybody, just because they are black. So let's address that U word, unfair, that these DEI programs are unfair.
So last year when this started creeping up, I share with you, when this started to begin to surface, we first saw it with scholarships. I remember being at an event. It was in Arkansas, and two black students received scholarships. Mm-hmm. Subsequent to that, within a few days later, we knew that they were being sued. And this was a division of their health department that gave these scholarships. They were being sued because you are discriminating in giving black students scholarships. And as you know, campuses and entities across this country for years have had to do that because many times folks of color are socioeconomically disadvantaged, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we know that we have had to support students to get into medical schools and other graduate medical education institutions through scholarships. So, you know, we began to see it. And I'll admit, after George Floyd's death, I was concerned. Many, as you saw, corporate entities, everyone started standing up for equity, equity, mm-hmm. equality. I was concerned about retaliation. I'll admit that I was. And so we begin to see this, and we've seen multiple scholarships being banned or removed because they're designated for black students or for students of color. And so when you talk about what's unfair is that we have to put DEI offices in place in the first place because of exclusionary practices, right, by mm-hmm. entities and individuals and institutions. What's unfair is that we had to do this and we had to have the input of the government and law enforcement to put these things in place because of unfair practices in the first place. And so this notion that he talks about being colorblind, I'd so wish, that's my ultimate dream, is that we had a colorblind society, but there's ignorance of the reality. That's the problem.
Yeah. You said something a moment ago that I'm sitting here noodling because it reminded me of a couple of things. And the point you made was that in the immediate aftermath of the death of George Floyd, to your point, corporations and multinationals, everybody was getting on the DE&I train. Everybody was signing up for equity. Everybody was signing up for inclusion and belonging and all of that stuff, all these corporations. Now, we know the data is incontrovertible on this. Let me just set this up, and we'll talk about it when we come forward. Again, the data is incontrovertible in this regard that these corporations who told these lies, I mean made these promises a few years ago, have started to do a 180. And I've said repeatedly on this program, I wish that somebody, I mean, if you want to win a Pulitzer Prize, I'll give this idea out again. Somebody ought to do a real story and just drill down on every single corporation, every single company after the murder of George Floyd who made a public pronouncement, who made a public promise, and dig into what they said and what they actually did or, frankly, what they did not do. Because there are many of us, like Dr. Lawson, I'm one of them. When we saw all these promises being made, I knew that that was going to have an impact politically because the right, all the folk who are pushing back against these corrective programs saw all of America, all of corporate America and beyond sign up for diversity, equity, and inclusion. At some point, there's going to be a backlash politically by the folk on the right who don't like the way that narrative is being written, don't like us moving in that direction. It reminds me of what Harry Belafonte, God rest his soul, my dear friend, reminds him of what Mr. B told me. I was with him the day after Barack Obama got elected. And when we come forward, I'll tell you how that moment hit Harry Belafonte. Here's a guy who had stood alongside and worked with and raised all this money serving. He would say he served Dr. King. Not just that King was his friend, but when he met Dr. King and King told him what he was working on, Harry Belafonte said, I will put myself in service to you. And that's how he saw that relationship. He was always in service to Dr. King. But Harry Belafonte has endured all of that, all the racism in his career. And when Obama gets elected, he is scared. He's celebrating on the one hand, but he's scared on the other hand. He's talking to me and he's crying. When we come forward, I'll tell you what he said and why that ties into what Dr. Lawson and I are discussing right now on Tavis Smiley.
Seeking the truth, speaking the truth. This is the Tavis Smiley Show. Made fresh daily in the Mert Park, Los Angeles, California. You're listening to Tavis Smiley.
Tavis Smiley and Dr. Yolanda Lawson, who's president of the National Medical Association. In case you've just tuned in, we have been talking about this legislation introduced by a member of Congress, Dr. Greg Murphy. He is actually a physician himself. He's a member of Congress out of North Carolina. And even though he is a doctor, he has introduced legislation to do away, to deny DE&I in the medical profession. This is a smart audience, so even if you've just tuned in, I ain't got to tell you all the ways, all the impacts that denying diversity, equity, and inclusion in the medical field would have on the profession, would have specifically on African-American patients. I ain't even got yet to the conversation about cultural competency. We'll get to that a little bit later in this hour, but this is a dangerous, dangerous piece of legislation. And as a physician, this white male out of North Carolina, Dr. Greg Murphy, ought to know better. Indeed, we know he knows better. Dr. Lawson made the point earlier, he's a urologist. He knows the impact that the data indicates black men suffer from when it comes to prostate cancer and beyond. So he knows better. My big mama said all the time, when you know better, you ought to do better. But they've taken that admonition and turned it on its head. I digress in that regard. I was saying before the break that Dr. Lawson said something that made me think about my friend, the late, great Harry Belafonte. So I was with Mr. B right around the time that President Obama was elected president. And we're in a conversation, and he is, on the one hand, jubilant, and on the other hand, he's scared. And he's scared essentially because he had lived at that point long enough to see a pattern of what happens when black folk in this country advance. Whenever we take one step forward, this nation will take two steps backwards. Every time we make progress, there is always, perennially, a backlash to that progress. So Mr. B was celebrating on the one hand, but shedding tears on the other hand, because he knew that just down the road, I was talking to some folk the other day around Easter, and we were sort of encouraging each other in this conversation, and one of our friends was going through something in particular. And I made the point that we can see to the corner. We can see to the corner, but God can see around the corner. And in that moment, we could see to the corner. Obama's elected, but Mr. Belafonte was looking around the corner, and he knew the backlash that was going to come. And that backlash came in a variety of ways in the first term. It came in other ways in the second term, and it showed up like a tsunami when Donald Trump comes on the scene. So there has been a backlash, and you will never convince me that the election of Donald Trump is not in part a backlash to the election of Barack Hussein Obama. So here comes Dr. Yolanda Lawson, president of the NMA, telling us that she felt that same way when she saw all these companies commit themselves publicly to DE&I. Tell me more about what you were feeling in that moment, Dr. Lawson, and why, how you were so prescient, so prophetic in that moment.
I absolutely, and you know, this is the first time I really shared how I felt, right? I just remember, and you couldn't turn on a TV. You couldn't go to Target without everyone talking about their commitments, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. Around equity, around inclusion, like you said earlier, belongings, the words they use now. And so I just distinctly recall then there's going to be a backlash to this. Mm-hmm. There's going to be attack. And then we subsequently began to see some of the conservative think tanks starting to hone in on some of the DEI institutions and offices and directors at certain institutions. Folks were losing jobs, defunding the department. We started to see this unraveling take place. Mm-hmm. And again, it's concerning because my task as the NMA president, of course, a large part of that is advocacy, right? Mm-hmm. When I'm in spaces and places and I'm able to speak up, I do that. But what is going to be in place? How do you protect all the progress we've made thus far of trying to diversify these medical schools, diversifying our residency programs, diversifying the types of doctors that are walking in the hallways of these hospitals. But I could submit to you, it's more than just the doctors. It's the nurses. Mm-hmm. It's the pharmacies. It's all of that that we have to advocate for.
You mentioned earlier discrimination. We started advance a conversation about racism in medicine. Tell me more. What are black physicians often subjected to in this field?
It's challenging what we're subjected to. So you heard me talk about earlier, we started talking about these being held to a higher standard. I don't know, I remember my mother telling me that when I went to medical school, you will have to be twice as good, mm-hmm. right, as your counterparts. Limited advancement opportunities. Do we have those opportunities to advance in our careers? You heard me talk about black faculty. You talk, we talk about the attrition rate sometimes, whether it's the black medical student or the black resident. We want them to finish, right? And what that support. And so some of these DEI offices, while whatever people envision them to be, I know for me, it was a source of support many times, mm-hmm. right, when it got hard about always having to be held to this higher standard. And then you think about some of these systemic and structural internal barriers. And that's broadly, right? Mm-hmm. I can speak to it for whether I'm talking about a medical academic institution or a hospital, but you think about this even when you think about corporate America. And sometimes as black folks are having to deal with these structural internal barriers. And then the inclusive environment. Inclusive workplace environments are good for all. And so I think about so many times black students, I remember being a resident and being the only, mm-hmm. and what that means, just that sense of isolation that can occur.
Yeah. How are we doing opening up this pipeline for black folk to get into medical school?
How are we doing?
Yeah, how are we doing?
We've heard of this, the black men in medicine. You know, we're doing poorly when we talk about black men getting into medical school. And you know, like you heard me say earlier, it's been 80 years and we've not been able to budge and increase that number. And you would think, right, mm-hmm. black folks are supposedly we're doing better economically. More of us are educated. More of us are finishing college. But when you look at that gap, that's another gap. Mm-hmm. You also, and so one of the things I like to talk about is they propose these DEI bans. It's more than just black medical students we're talking about. This, when you think about this diversity, these initiatives, this protected gender, right, mm-hmm. women mm-hmm. advancement, it protected folks from a religious, right, a religious space. You think about gender policies and protecting the LGBTQIA community. So it's broad. This is not something where I think anybody stands on the sidelines. Mm-hmm. This will impact many others than just those who consider this to be race-based.
Mm-hmm. No, it reminds me of that poem, that first they came for me, first they came for him, rather, and I didn't say nothing. And then they came for her, and I didn't say nothing. And then, lo and behold, they came for me, and there wasn't nobody left around to say nothing on my behalf. And so I take your point about the fact that it ain't just black folk. It starts there, but it is a slippery, slippery slope. Our guest in this hour is Dr. Yolanda Lawson. She's president of the National Medical Association. When we come forward, we'll talk about cultural competency. We've talked about the difficulties that black folk already have getting in this space and thriving in this space and the racism in medicine. And here, this member of Congress, Dr. Murphy, Congressman Greg Murphy out of North Carolina, wants to pass legislation to do away with DE&I considerations in medicine. It was a bad idea the minute he thought about it. I digress on that point. But he also has to know, we said earlier, he ain't stupid. He also has to know that there's an issue called cultural competency. And for a nation that is more multicultural, multiracial, and multi-ethnic now, more than ever, what about that part? What about the cultural competency that everyday people ought to be allowed to experience and be exposed to? And this is a country that in just a few years from now will be a minority country. And again, the timing of this legislation is specious, say nothing of what he's attempting to do. We'll continue with Dr. Yolanda Lawson when we come forward on Tavis Smiley.
Hope,
agency, dignity. This is Tavis Smiley.
Can you dig it?
Come on! Let's get back to more of this rich dialogue with Tavis Smiley.
Dr. Yolanda Lawson, tell me about cultural competency. Here we have a shortage of doctors in this country, we've already mentioned. This Congressman Murphy out of North Carolina now wants to pass legislation to do away with DE&I in medicine, which will make it even more difficult, put up another hurdle for black folk to get in the medical profession. And we already, you know, have to deal with going to see doctors who don't understand us, don't get us. You take my point, do you not?
Yes.
Talk to me then about cultural competency and how this legislation, if passed, makes that even more a more difficult path to navigate.
So I'm going to break this up for you. We can talk about cultural competency, right? And so many times medical schools, hospitals require us to take maybe a two-hour course around implicit bias or cultural competence, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. I have long argued that's not enough,
okay.
Right? People have biases that are built in. You can't change that by going to a two-hour webinar, right? And so right? But I'm being honest here.
I got you.
It is much more extensive than that. But I pivot you to racially concordant care.
Okay.
That is when there is enough black doctors in this country that can take of the black population in this country. Mm-hmm. You heard me say it's about 5.7% of black doctors. African Americans make up about 14% of the population. So when we get to racially concordant care, and there's been much research done about this. Last year, an article, a paper published out of JAMA, talked about just having one black doctor in a county improved the life expectancy, not only of the black population, but also the white. Mm. So the importance of a black doctor and what that means. And the reason this is so important, because when you talk about banning DEI and what that means, that contributes to this already significant health gap that African Americans face. I'm going to run you through a few things. I was sitting here at the break thinking about how are we impacted by this. Our black babies, infant mortality. 2.4 times that of a black baby versus a white baby. You've heard multiple conversations around maternal mortality. Mm-hmm. Black women die about 3 times the rate of white women in childbirth in this country. We have the highest mortality of any other racial or ethnic group for all cancers combined. Heart disease, we're more likely to die than any other ethnic or racial group. Twice as likely to die from complications of diabetes. 3 times more likely to be diagnosed with end-stage renal disease. HIV disparity. There's a deadly toll of these health inequities. And when you're talking about these kinds of exclusionary practices, yeah, that could potentially even further reduce the number of black physicians trying to achieve this racially concordant care, right? We've been trying since 1895. NMA was formed in 1895. We're the only people in this game since 1895. Mm-hmm. When you talk about health equity. And so we've not been able to achieve it yet.
Yeah.
I say this with the Supreme Court decision, right?
Yeah.
That affirmative action is in place, and we still couldn't get there.
Yeah. No, as you were running that list, it occurred to me, and this is not, some might call this hyperbolic. I would not use that word to describe what I'm about to say, because I'm the one about to say it. But I'm sure somebody's going to push back on me for saying it. It won't be the first or last time. As you're running that list, what Dr. Murphy is really doing here, just call a spade a spade. When you deny black people access, it's already difficult as it is, but when you deny them access, when you deny them opportunity in the medical field, what you're really doing is advancing a death sentence for black people. When you deny black physicians mm-hmm. an opportunity to do what they do, allow folk to be deny them a chance to become a black physician, it is a death sentence to black folk. Now, if you think that's hyperbolic, meet me outside in the parking lot after this show. My name is Tavis Smiley.
What's your quarrel with the world? You're listening to Tavis Smiley.
Sounds different.
Huh. This is Tavis Smiley.
This is Tavis Smiley in conversation with Dr. Yolanda Lawson, who's president of the National Medical Association, at least for the 3 minutes I have left in this hour. Two comments, there are tons of them, but I want to read just two comments right quick, Dr. Lawson. One comment and one question before I let you go here in 3 minutes. The comment is this: Tavis, I agree with Dr. Lawson. As an academic myself, I too was afraid of DEI language and also anticipated backlash. While it is unfair, we black folk have to be smarter about the way we use language. The narrative needs to be about blocked opportunities based on poverty. Race doesn't necessarily have to be the explicit focus to achieve the goal. That's the comment. Here's the question from another listener. What about educating future black doctors abroad, especially in places with lots of black folk like the Caribbean and Africa? For instance, Castro trained a bunch of POC American doctors back mm-hmm. in the day. Mm-hmm. Did it work? I've been to Cuba. I've talked to Castro about this. God rest his soul. But that's the question for you, Dr. Lawson.
So there are medical schools all over the globe. And so one of the issues right now, many of these other countries, whether it be the Caribbean, whether it be Africa, brain drain, their talent is leaving to wants to come to the U.S., right?
Yeah.
And so there's that's a whole nother conversation we have on this immigration piece. Mm-hmm. But that's an immigration piece. And remember, when they train outside of this country, they have to come back here to retrain with residency training.
Mm-hmm.
So those are international medical graduates. There is concern on that nationally because you have black medical students graduating right here on U.S. soil, and there's only so many slots. Do we favor, you know, how do you divide that up? Because we have overwhelmingly, not only from Africa, all types of countries that want to have these residency slots in U.S.
Yeah.
And now we're seeing where there's a higher number of black U.S.-trained medical graduates not matching for residency. You can't get a license without that training.
Yeah. So let me close on this note. I got 60 seconds here. Let me close. I read that question because it was an insightful question, I think, and I wanted to see what you had to say,
yeah.
And you answered brilliantly, as you have every other question I've asked in this hour. But at the end of the day, when I read it, I sort of laughed because the bottom line is I shouldn't have to leave my country.
Right.
I shouldn't have to leave my country to go be educated someplace else because you're denying me. How about that? How about I just stay here in the land that my ancestors helped build that they were never paid for and get an education? How about that? Not me having to go to Cuba or someplace else to get an education because I'm denied in the place of my birth. I digress. Her name is Dr. Yolanda Lawson. She's president of the National Medical Association, and she and all of her colleagues are fighting against this absurd legislation advanced by a physician himself, Dr. Greg Murphy, congressman out of North Carolina. Look him up, read about him. But this is the legislation he's trying to get through to ban DE&I in medical education. And let's do what we can to make sure that piece of legislation never passes Congress. Dr. Lawson, thank you for your work and witness, and honor to have had you on this program. I appreciate you.
Thank you. Have a great day. Thanks for bringing this to light.
Glad to do it. More of Tavis Smiley when we come forward.